What's reality? Is it really popular? 'Cause I'm what's reality? Is it real? Is it real? Is it what's reality? Reality, reality, reality.
It's the Naked Songwriter Podcast, coming to you at the stroke of midnight, June 1st, 6-1-2017. What is reality? Man, whew, that one hit me hard. Soundgarden, God, it's one of those bands that I just, whenever I need to get angry and get up, you know, get out of my own despair, get out of my own way, get some fierceness going. I don't know any Soundgarden songs. I mean, I know a lot of them. I don't know how to play them on the guitar. I'm gonna break my rusted cage and run. Man. Yeah. You know, I was talking to a client who I don't think will mind me sharing this, but we were talking about Chris Cornell's chart. And just, we both felt like he didn't want that to happen. You know, definitely probably had the anxiety going and, you know, was down, but he's like a 28 degree Cancer sun. So, you know, big empath. I mean, by all accounts, like a really kind, gentle guy, you know, the guy that, and I mean, his lyrics were really uplifting, I thought. I mean, what's not uplifting about, I know I'm headed for the bottom, but I'm riding you all the way, riding. Okay, I won't give you too much more Chris Cornell impression, because I definitely do not have the 4-octave Chris Cornell vocal range, but yeah, I guess it just, I don't know. It's sad, you know, that somebody that I really listen to a lot. And somebody, like I said, I mean, there's so many musicians, I feel like their music has saved my life. And Chris Cornell is definitely one of them. So, you know, just like a friend of mine, somebody in one of her daughter's classmates just committed suicide. And you know, it's like, I'm not really sure astrologically what is causing all this. I don't know if it's kind of a cumulative effect. And we definitely got some intense astrology. So I'm going to discuss what I think that is. And I'm probably just going to play some more music than usual too, because just seems like we kind of need some sad but redemptive songs. So my band that I've been in for 20 years, maybe more than that, our most recent album was it's just been posted on Spotify, so I'll put a link to that on the podcast page. But I'm going to play one or two songs from that later on in the show, I think. And man, I'm at the end of about 14-15 hours today. Just really able to be focused and working hard, but I just felt like I needed to get this out there. So don't do it. You know, if you're thinking about killing yourself, just hang in there a little bit longer. Call somebody that loves you. Somebody loves you. If you can't pick up the phone, you know, send an email, send a text. I mean, it's just like, hey, man, I'm feeling down, feeling really down, kind of scaring myself, you know. I don't really want to talk, but just be nice to know you're out there. Something along those lines, right? Because this too shall pass. Sooner or later. And, you know, just sometimes it just helps to know that everybody's feeling it. Maybe not every day, but I've just talked to so many sensitives in the last 2 or 3 weeks who are, you know, going through these waves of hopelessness and dark night of the soul kind of feeling. And the song I started out with, that's a new little piece I've been working on, which, it just came out of this shocking kind of, not totally surprising, but somewhat shocking thing that happened in my life. And I was just like, you know what? What story am I going to tell myself here? Am I going to tell myself that, oh, there we go again. Everything's fucked, man. You know, it's just down, all downhill from here. There's no way out. Definitely one of my ancestral stories. I'm really excited because I'm going to get to do a live workshop at the Boston Tea Room in Ferndale, Michigan on Saturday, July 1st. So if you're in Michigan and you're listening, get in touch, come and check it out. Going to be doing a version of the Epigenetics and Ancestors workshop that Dr. Diana Quinn and I did online a few months ago. And really excited about that work because it's so powerful. You know, it's a powerful healing for those of us who are doing it, but it's also, you know, I really believe in everybody that took part in the online workshop, we could feel the effect reverberating through time in both directions. So, you know, we're entering this, the post-2012 era. I mean, obviously we're already in it, but we're stepping more fully into it. And one of the things that is really going to change, and this was, you know, consistent and all, I did a huge amount of research on the 2012 moment back in 2008. And the most consistent thing that I found in all of the literature on the Maya and other indigenous cultures, and you know, I've mentioned this before, but Terrence and Dennis McKenna. And the most consistent thing was that our experience of time is going to change radically after the 2012 moment. So, you know, that's a big moment. It's going to take a while for that to become really apparent. But I think those of us who are tuned in are already seeing it. And basically, when we clear trauma from our bodies, from our hearts, from our minds, we are also clearing it for our ancestors, many of whom, you know, lived lives that make our grimness. And, you know, I believe everybody's personal hell is as intense as everybody else's personal hell. When you're in hell, you're in hell, you know, and whether that's depression or whether that's anxiety or whether that's, you know, a disease that has struck you and that you're battling, or it's money or it's relationships or it's your weight or whatever, addiction. You know, it's like when you're in that personal hell, you know, why bother to compare, right? So we can always look and find somebody whose material circumstances are much worse than ours. Somebody who's, you know, a sex slave or a starving child or whatever, right? There's just a lot of horror in the world. But it's true that many of our ancestors through many generations, you know, they live lives that are just like, it makes our lives look like summer camp, right? Well, if you liked summer camp, how about summer vacation? And when we clear trauma from our system, we're also clearing it for them. And that's one way that we can honor them. And then we're also clearing it for future generations, which is pretty freaking awesome. Yeah, so I want to talk about, you know, the stories that we're telling ourselves too, because it is intense, right? You know, it's like easy, even if you're like me and you don't watch the news and you don't read the newspaper and you don't, you know, you try to tune all that stuff out, you can feel it, you know, from the people around you, from the collective. You can feel the, you know, where people are. And it's not a good place, man. It's a kind of dark place, right? But, you know, we do have choices with the stories that we're telling. And my client was saying, she pointed out to me that not only is Mars out of bounds for a 6-week period, beginning, I think, the middle of May and ending, I can't remember. Maybe it was earlier than that. But I think it ends like June 9th or something, maybe. But Chris Cornell also had Mars out of bounds in his natal chart. And, we don't know what time he was born, but looking at his solar chart, at the time of his death, he had Mars in the solar 12th house, Mars out of bounds. And that just seems to be this real kind of, at least in transit, like this real exaggerated kind of expression of Mars. So Mars in Gemini is going to amplify our thoughts anyway. And Gemini, the sign of duality, you know, negatively the sign of the monkey mind. So it's going to increase that. And the 12th house is the house of secret enemies or of self-undoing, of addiction as well. And he had Mars opposing his moon and black moon in Sagittarius. We don't know exactly where his natal moon is because we don't know his birth time, but somewhere right around 15 degrees Sagittarius. Transiting Black Moon Lilith is also in the picture at about 10 or 11 degrees Sag. And then all of that is in a grand temporary grand cross pattern to his natal Pluto in Virgo and then transiting Neptune in Pisces. So, you know, if you think Neptune in Pisces, confusion, delusion, 12th house, Mars, like this aggressive urge to self-destruct. And then, you know, he's also this empath. And as my client pointed out, which I really think is a great interpretation, he's up there, you know, on stage feeling the despair that the audiences are feeling. Because, I mean, you just walk around, you can feel this shit, man. It's like crazy, right? And we just both felt like, you know, he probably took a couple of extra Ativan for his anxiety and, you know, may have picked up some entities from the crowd or something. But, you know, I'd love to get her on the show to talk about it because it's like her experience of it was kind of multidimensional. But I'm doing the best I can while respecting client privilege and all that. But all that to say, like, man, if you get hit by one of those waves of despair, like, don't do it, right? Reach out for help. You know, nobody really cares if you do it by text or email or by, you know, lighting something on fire in the yard so somebody has to come running. But it just felt like, as soon as he realized what he had done, you know, he was like, I didn't want to do that. I didn't mean to do that. And I just feel like there's like, you know, it's so, look, man, we're at war. Okay. You know, I mean, we can't, you know, love and peace and all that. And, you know, I believe that the way to fight the system is through creating more beauty, creating more goodness, tuning into what has lasting value, right? To what's important to each of us. But that doesn't mean that we deny the reality of what's happening. As long as we're in duality, you know, we're going to be dealing with dualistic conditions. And this is a war. This is a revolution. You know, there are certain forces in the world that don't want the revolution to happen because they are very entrenched in their little, you know, satanic, demonic, archontic, whatever you want to call it, parasitical power and control mechanisms, you know, and they're, we got them now. We got them where they want, you know, it's just like this crazy shit, right? So they're really aware of the fact that they're in a war on you and on us. And, you know, those of us who are standing up for the new paradigm, the paradigm of the creative age, of beauty, of egalitarianism, of, you know, equal opportunity for everybody, regardless of their skin tone or their gender orientation, right? They, you know, I don't know if, I'm not saying the people know who we are necessarily, but the parasitical entities that control the bad people, they know who we are. And, you know, I'm seeing it right and left with people that are, you know, we got to step up our game is what I'm saying. We got to support one another. You know, I've been out here on the front line for the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, it's just by the grace of Goddess and the angels and my ancestors, you know, and the people who believe in me that I feel like I'm still ambulatory because, you know, it's like, I'm not going to say every day, but, you know, there have been many days over the last 3 or 4 years where I have felt that pressure, you know, and I've felt them trying to shut me up, shut me down, convince me to go back into the negative stories. So, you know, one of the things that you find out when you start looking into like, what stories am I telling myself? And this is directly related to that ancestral lineage piece is that a lot of those stories aren't even really yours. They are just implanted in you by, you know, it's like whatever your mom and dad couldn't deal with, whatever shame and fear they couldn't integrate, they couldn't handle, they didn't have the tools to know what to do with, that gets dumped right into you, you know? And so we grow up and we think these things are, you know, I'm bad, I'm an addict, I'm fat and I can't lose weight, you know, I need to stop smoking, but I can't. Like a lot of those things are not really even personal at all. I mean, they are our personal responsibility. We need to develop the ability to respond to them because they're in us. But what we're really doing at this time in history, which makes it, you know, it's daunting at times, but it's also so exciting, is that we're the generations who are waking up and seeing, you know, to some extent, the matrix or the reality illusion as it really is. And so we really need to support one another and keep encouraging one another, you know, because that's just so valuable in keeping your spirits up. If you're out there alone trying to deal with this, you know, you can do it for a while, but we definitely need community. We need to support one another. So I'm going to play a couple more minutes of music for you, but this song, you know, I wrote it when I was initially planning on starting this podcast about a week ago, and I am going to try to get more consistent again, man, I really am. Just trying to deal with the life stuff over here, right? As I'm sure you are too, but that is one of my big intentions for this year. But, you know, it's like I had this kind of shocking realization, and I was like, okay. Luckily, I had the awareness to be able to say, okay, this is one of those moments. You can go back into that old ancestral tale of woe and, you know, of being powerless and of, you know, God hates you and all these forces are aligned against you and there's nothing you can do. So you might as well go into despair or rage or whatever. Or you could just shut up and play your guitar. And so I seriously just started like picking some sounds in Ableton, just threw down a really simple bass line that I was kind of hearing in my head and picked up my guitar and started playing. And, you know, with a little tweaking and stuff, it kind of came out sounding like this. So is that the greatest song ever written? Nah, probably not. Not even the greatest song I've ever written. But, you know, one of the things I realized like a couple days later is I was, you know, because I jam out these things and I'm like, okay, I got to edit this down from 6 minutes to a listenable length if I'm going to put it out there. Just out of courtesy to you, man, you get it? You dig. But I was like, wow, you know, I didn't even know what key that was in. I'm like fumbling around, you know, because I just like did this bass line, Ableton Push. And, you know, I can see the colored buttons of where I pushed the notes to get the bass. I just kind of cruised around till I found something that sounded like what I wanted. I didn't know what key it was in, man. You know, so I'm like trying to find the key, and then I'm finding chords that work with the key. And then once you find the root note, you know, you're pretty good on like knowing where the notes are. But, you know, that was all like just picking up the guitar and just like, okay, this sounds pretty good. Let's rock it out. So definitely, you know, not the most coherent solo I've ever played either. But a couple days later, I was like, wow, you know, that's an interesting juxtaposition of stories. Because I could either look at that, look at this experience as, wow, this really bad thing happened and nothing has changed, you know, days later. The bad thing is still happening. And I'm totally screwed and there's no way out and everything's just going to get worse from here. Well, I can tell you, I spent years in that story, man, and that is not a fun story. But then I realized, like, or... you know, there's another story I could focus in on here, which is a few years ago, there's no way I could have done this. Like, I'm so much better of a guitar player now than I ever imagined, than I ever really believed I could be, you know, when I was like 20, 25, 30 even. So that's a really awesome story. You know, I stuck with it. And there's lots of years where I didn't stick with it very much because I was changing diapers, you know, and dealing with 2-year-olds and scary skeletons and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, we always have this choice, and not that it's always easy to get there. I was thinking about something my mom said a while back. She made this little photo book of some photos she found from when we were young, when my brother and I were little kids, and like up through the teenage years, and some pictures of me, baby pictures. I was a cute baby, man. I was a cute little kid too. It's like, I don't know what happened in between, man, but I was sure was a cute, sweet little guy back then. But my mom was a dish, man. She was a hot. She was so pretty. She was beautiful. You know, and when you're a teenager or whatever, you don't think of your mom like that, right? Well, maybe you do, but I didn't. You know, she's just your mom. She looks like a mom. And, you know, when I was a teenager too, my mom was like, we were trapped in the fundamentalist bullshit, you know, and she's like all being busted on for wearing, getting caught wearing pants out somewhere or riding her bike or whatever. And, you know, she was just like went into full on rebellion and just kind of let herself look like whatever she looked like when she woke up, I guess. But so, you know, seeing these pictures was really a revelation. And I said something to her. I'm like, Mom, you were so beautiful. And my mom said, you know, honey, I wish I would have known that back then, because I didn't think of myself as beautiful at all. I thought I was horrible, you know, hideous. And now I'll never look like that again. You know, it's too late to kind of go back and appreciate that. And I wish I would have appreciated it while it was there. You know, and that's kind of sad, but it's also kind of beautiful in its honesty. And I was talking on the last podcast about, you know, how we all have this one issue. I mean, it's just as an astrologer, I see it, you know, every day. Well, not lately, because lately I've had a lot of free time. So thanks for the free time, clients out there. I've actually been able to get some stuff done and get a little rest. And yeah. But I am open for business. So, you know, if you listen to this and you've been waiting to get that reading, hey, let me tell you, now's a good time. Next week is pretty like, I think my schedule is kind of blank right now. But I just raised my prices because I figured I'm probably charging too little. And the universe is like, come on, man, you got to value what you give. I rewrote it like, I'm redoing most of my website because I feel like I'm coming out of this period of like just facing a whole bunch of family shame. And, you know, it's just hard to feel really great when you're dealing with shame. I don't know, maybe it's easy for you, you know. And by the way, I probably thought your mom was hot when I was a teenager, because if you're, yeah, anyway, we won't go there. Oh, yeah. Amy Graves' mom, if you're still out there. Mm. Okay. And there's a couple other ones, but I am getting off track here. So, yeah, hard to feel great when you're dealing with the shame. But where was I? God, don't let me go back to that, okay? You know, all these regrets. I'm telling you, man, when I get to heaven, and I'm definitely going to heaven this time around, not that I've gone to other place, because this is where hell happens, you know? I mean, yeah, if you're a ghost or something, that's got to be kind of hellish, but people think hell is like this lake of fire somewhere, like under the earth in outer space, you know, like there's really a top and a bottom to outer space. But that's a whole nother story. But it's like we all have our problem, you know, and it's just this pattern that kind of keeps repeating in various guises throughout much of our lives, it seems. And, you know, it's like the story, the collective story that keeps us in slavery is that we need to focus on that problem and we need to fix that problem, and we're not allowed to love what's good about ourselves and about our lives, because there's this fucking huge problem and I gotta solve this problem, man. Can't you see? You know, and in reality, unless we're leading with that and like pushing that in other people's faces, which we tend to do because it really hurts and we want someone to fix it for us. But in reality, like other people don't care. You know, yeah, it's like, oh, wow, you really want to lose weight. That's weird. I never thought of you as being like that fat or whatever, you know, just figured whatever, you know, or, you know, whatever the problem is, right? People are just like, hey, man, that's all right. We've all got problems and you're really awesome with this and you're really beautiful and, you know, you're so kind and you try so hard and other people really don't care about that problem, you know, almost at all, and certainly not to the obsessive extent that we do. But that's not your fault. It's not our fault, right? That's this kind of genetic program that's been just passed down for so many generations, and there's this collective story that enforces our adherence to that and our belief in that. But I feel like a huge part of the revolution, you know, that's really becoming apparent right now is we know we can change the story. We know it's going to take some work and, you know, we might have to learn some new skills, but we know we can change it in our souls and our spirits. We do. And that's the revolution, you know, that's the revolution, is to be like, wow, you know, I'm like really kind of fucked up. Like, I mean, I've had this like problem with my skin on my beard for like now a year and a half now. And sometimes it gets really bad. It's like being a teenager again and having acne, you know, and it's like, I just want to hide because I feel hideous. Well, you know, some people are going to notice it and be like, wow, what's wrong with that guy's face? But for the most part, right, you know, it's not a big deal. I mean, people, like, you got a problem, you're going to get over it sooner or later, right? And, you know, just an example of, okay, am I going to hide? Or am I going to be like, you know, when we hide, why do we hide? Because we're ashamed. Why do we feel ashamed? Because it's my fault somehow. You know, I should be better. Man, I had this whole thing about, so, and this happened like right before Chris Cornell's death, like the day or two before. So like when I heard the news, it kind of, you know, it was shocking and saddening, but I was also like, wow, I totally get that, because there was this wave of despair that swept through. And I talked to a lot of other people who felt it too. And I was, you know, trying to ignore it. I was trying to just like stay on the surface and, you know, do what needed to be done. And I got work to do. I can't slow down and feel the sadness. And finally it got so crippling. I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm going to lie down on the couch and I'm going to, you know, feel into this. What's this sadness and this heaviness I feel in my chest and my stomach? Ugh, God, I hate, I have to do this, but I guess I better. And, it was like almost instantaneous, you know, that it came out, and it was like, the words I heard were, I hate rules. Oh, okay. And it felt like, you know, one of my child selves could just as well have been one of my ancestors, including two of them I can think of, male and female progenitors, still alive. But it was like, okay, why do you hate rules? Because the people who enforce rules, and I had just run into this total like dragon lady. And listen there, all you feminists, now don't get your panties up in a bunch, all right? Because if it had been a man, I would have said I just run into this total prick, okay? Like a limp prick. Someone with tiny testicles. It was just one of those people who was like, just delights in punishing you because you broke the rules, you know? And it was like I had a doctor appointment and there was an accident on 285 in Atlanta and it shut down like 4 out of 5 lanes. And I'm, God, you know, I got over like 4 lanes, you know, cutting in front of semis and tow trucks and getting stalked by this giant cement mixer. It took me like a mile to get over 4 lanes and I got off on the side road and was following Google Maps. You know, and then she got me back on and I was basically almost in the same place. And so I was totally late and I called like, you know, twice and nobody answered the phone. I left a message. Hey, I'm stuck in this traffic. And this woman was just like, loved it, man. She loved the punishment of like turning me away, making me drive all the way back across Atlanta, you know, and reschedule. And I was just like so enraged, right? And then it's like, but then it turned into this, and I had tried to do my best to express the anger in a healthy way, but it must have triggered some really deep stuff. Because it was like, I hate rules and I hate the people who enforce rules blindly. Well, why? Because rules hurt you. You know, and that was like my whole upbringing with the, you know, paranoid Vietnam vet dad and the fundamentalist Christian church and school. But I realized like how being trapped in that story about rules, you know, especially the part that says that I'm powerless to do anything about it, how crippling, you know, that has been for me many times in my life. But as I dug in deeper into the sadness, you know, it's like, okay, well, what, you know, what's the deal with that? Well, they tell me to do all these things, that I should do all these things, but I can't. I can't do them. And then there's all these things they tell me I shouldn't do, but I can't stop. I can't give it up. I can't quit. I was like, whoa, that is so powerful. You know, because then I could just instantly see flash after flash of when I was a kid, you know, and, you know, pay attention, sit up straight, walk right. Why don't you walk like a normal person? You know, I mean, just on and on and on and on, right? Or the things that I shouldn't be doing that I was doing. And I think that, you know, I would be surprised if you can't find some of those in your life too, but it really felt like that's the big collective, a big part of the collective, you know, control mechanism is that then we feel ashamed for we're supposed to be somebody that we can't be, you know, and sometimes we just can't, we couldn't as a child be who we were supposed to be in order to get the love or escape the punishment. And then that just gets pushed into the subconscious and it plays out over and over and over again. That's a really shitty story to be stuck in. And then you look at our society and you can see, you know, how many millions and millions and millions of us are trapped in that story. That's the revolution, my friends. We're going to change that, all right? And I'm just going to be out here preaching until we make some progress with it. So, you know, I need your support, energetic support, your goodwill. If you dig what I'm laying down here, you know, just let me know, send me some feedback, post some comments on my website, share my work with people that you think might be receptive to it or could use it. All right, because I need to be supported as well as supporting you. And that's something I'm growing up into realizing that I can ask for that. And that's really a good thing, actually. So I'm going to play another song for you. And then we're going to look at Mars, square, Chiron, and Pisces. So I did a couple blog posts about the Mars-Saturn opposition. You can check those out on my website. But I want to fill in what I think is the missing piece. So we've got Mars, square, Chiron on Friday. And I feel like that's another trigger point. But first, I'm going to play you a song from the Detroit rock band Stand and Deliver. This is Ulysses Returned.
I live my life as a thief. Now my hands have grown weak. They won't serve me no more. The pass key I found, and the bottle is rusted, no longer turning the door. No one sees the blind prophet who sits by the gate, but inside the feast does rage. They slake their thirst with blood and wine, but the gods are not assuaged. And Ulysses returned. Find the world in flames. They dance while the cities burn. And they auction off the blame. Just like old Father Time, our faithful enemy. Saw you. You were dancing with an angel of light, and the shadow cast upon your face was deeper than the night. gather round, drank the poison from his lips, our blood pooled around. I am you, and I am them, and all of you are me. We are all that's left behind that sad-eyed century.
We got Mars exactly square Chiron and Pisces on Friday, and that's been building up for a while now. And Chiron's in the 29th degree of Pisces, so that would put Mars in the 29th degree of Gemini, which is still very close to an exact opposition, just past an exact opposition to the galactic center, which I wrote about last month. You can find that on my blog in relation to Saturn and Venus. But, you know, it's kind of like I dug out, I found a box of books, which is always cool, in the never-ending move. And I dug out Melanie Reinhardt's book on Chiron, so Chiron and the Healing Journey, something that I read years ago. And I remember at the time just thinking like, eh, you know, this is all right, but digging back into it, she's got some really great stuff on Chiron. So I want to read you a couple of excerpts on her chapter, from her chapter in Chiron on Pisces, that I found particularly resonant with our time. She says, where is this? That with Chiron and Pisces, there's often a deep wound connected with grief. Perhaps we feel a chronic existential grief, often crying for no apparent reason. We grieve for the pain we imagine others to be feeling, even if they are not aware of it themselves. Our feelings may be archetypal rather than personal. We may mourn the loss of original unity and bliss. So the transit from innocence to experience in Blakean terms, you know, we lose that sense of universal identity. And one of the things she says that I found really relevant for our time is since the early 19th century, every transit of Chiron through Pisces has seen a major war and featured issues such as the rights of black people and or other socially oppressed groups. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. She didn't say that because this was written before that, but racism and the abuse of human rights provoke strong emotions of guilt, fear, anger, and sorrow in us. They are flagrant examples of everything that divides man from man and betrays our underlying sense of unity. They thus typify at a collective level the wound of Chiron in Pisces. So, I mean, in some ways, I don't want to say we haven't had a major war over the last several years, the last 8 years or so. You know, I think the war is more subtle. It's just a war on everybody, basically, but especially minorities, and that's a bad word, people of different skin color, women and children, you know, which I feel like the war against children, which is starting to come to our attention through the sex slave trade and, you know, things like Pizzagate and just the you know, what, institutionalized epidemic, what do you want to call it, sexual abuse of children at the highest levels of government and of, you know, the corporate world and all that, that's really just starting to come to life. That feels very Chiron in Pisces to me. But, yeah, it's like, I think there is this really deep kind of existential grief that we're feeling. And we're almost through Chiron and Pisces, so Chiron's going to go retrograde on July 2nd and kind of move backward into Pisces, and it's going to be hitting the galactic center and Saturn by square again. So, you know, exciting times coming up with that. That's sarcasm. But Chiron is moving into Aries next year, and that's a whole different ball game, whole different ball of wax. But, you know, I guess all that to say, pay attention, you know, this week, and just recognize if you're feeling that grief, you got to do something with it. You got to stop and feel it and let it express through you, and then you'll feel better. And I need to take that advice myself. But yeah, hang in there, man, because we need each other right now, like, you know, like never before, right? And I could go on and on, but it's like 1:15 in the morning, and I got another big day tomorrow from 10-year Bender, the Stand and Deliver album that is now out on Spotify. So look for it. It's Stand & Deliver. By the way, I think there's some kind of weirdo country band out there that also took the name. But it's called 10-Year Bender is the album. And this song was an expression of my feeling the existential grief. So it's kind of sad, but I hope that you will find it healing. It's just an acoustic guitar and vocal song, and, it's called Deep Dark River. So I'll be back hopefully sooner than last time with another podcast. Check me out on dkbrainer.com, and love your comments, love your feedback, love your support, need your support. And, we can do this together. It's the revolution, baby. And it ain't going to look like any revolution the world has ever seen. But let's change those stories, because you know what? We are life. Therefore, we do have the power. So don't buy into that bullshit that says that somebody else has it. And, yeah, you go with the stars.
Well, I asked and they gave me wisdom. Has not brought me peace, has not stopped me longing for that sweet release. There are two paths you can go down, a third you cannot see. That's the road that calls your soul eternity. It's a deep dark river, carries us on home. Deep dark river carries us along. Now dreams rest like the bubbles, and they're gone. Deep dark river carries us on home. If I could give you all the love, girl, love that you would ask, I'd empty myself out until there's nothing left.
Deep dark river carries us on.